Morning, everybody. I think it's about that time, and I am not Governor Bullock. So I'm going to take his name down, and so it's good to see everybody. I served on this board for 12 years, a few years ago, like 17. So I'm hoping I can remember how everything works. It's kind of like maybe riding a bicycle. We'll see. Anyway, it's nice to see everybody, and I want to welcome everybody. The first thing that I would like to do is, I'm assuming that the members have had a chance to read the minutes. Is there a motion on the minutes?
I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Attorney General. Is there a second?
I second.
Thank you very much, Superintendent. You've heard the motion. Any discussion? All those in favor will say aye.
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 Those opposed say no. It appears to have passed. We'll go to the first action item, 0717-1. Director Tubbs.
These are the three limited access timber sales. I'll read them in order. Item A is the Little Dry Limited Access Timber Sales, located 6.5 miles southeast of Livingston, Montana. One harvest unit, 21 acres, 200,000 board feet. Negotiated rate at $14.53 per ton. We are logging Douglas fir and subalpine fir and lodgepole pine. Proposing to make 905 feet of new road and 1.8 miles of road maintenance. We recommend the little dry limited access timber sale. The second timber sale is the School Gulch Limited Access Timber Sale, located 11 miles northeast of Bozeman. The sale includes seven harvest units, 243 acres of tractor logging, 975,000 board feet, $9 per ton. The prescription is a shelter wood and sea tree treatment, and we intend to remove the Douglas fir. The 1.8 miles of new road construction is a restricted road, and at 3.3 miles of road maintenance. Access has been obtained by the proponent via the temporary road use agreement with the landowner who controls the existing access. We did receive comments from local landowners. The concerns are listed. We have tried to resolve those through our environmental assessment process. There is a road that cuts through this tract of state land that you can see on the map on page 3 of this agenda item. That road goes to a single residence We gave that residence a right-of-way through our property, but it is not a public road. And finally, the third timber sale is the South Crow Limited Access timber sale. This timber sale is approximately 3 miles southeast of Ronan, three harvest units, 2 million board feet. And I do want to make some note of the size of that and scale of that particular. We passed House Bill 38 in the last session. That allows us to go up to 2 million board feet. This is on the CSKT reservation. It's unique agreement this time with the CSKT, and I know Sonia Gurman is here. This is a culturally sensitive area. So typically we would have a limited access on tribal lands, but this particular one goes into a site that the tribe is very particular about, and so that they just wanted this one-time entry without necessarily a long term. We'll keep working with the tribe on that, but it is unique. Those are the three timber sales. We recommend approval.
Thank you, Mr. Director. Is there a discussion from the board?
Mr. Chairman.
Public comment.
Public comment. Oh, okay. Public comment. Is there any public comment? Seeing no public comment, how about discussion from the board?
After the motion.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of action item 07171 A, B, and C.
Thank you, General. Is there a second?
Mr. Chair, I would second that motion.
Thank you. Auditor, it's been moved and seconded. Now is there a discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I just wonder if I don't recall ever encountering this situation where we have a landowner who controls the existing access that then leads to a temporary road use agreement. Director Tubbs, if maybe Sean could just kind of briefly tell us how that works.
Sure. and it was the subject of the legislation this session as well as in past sessions.
Sean?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Land Board. For the record, I'm Sean Thomas. I'm the Administrator for the Trust Land Management Division of DNRC. Mr. Chairman, General Fox, in short, we have a provision in statute that allows for us to grant timber sales on a negotiated basis to people who control the access. And they're usually in situations where somebody's doing some timberland management on their own private property next door. They see an issue of forest health or some reason that they think that they may want or that we may want to treat the state land adjacent to them, but they have a particular reason for only wanting the contractor that they've been dealing with that they trust or whatever to do that work. And so what we'll do is sometimes the contractor or the landowner may approach us and say, hey, we have this opportunity here. Our local folks will go out and take a look, and if it's something that we think we can take advantage of, then we'll put together this limited access timber sale under these sorts of restrictions. It's a bit unusual. We haven't had a lot of them, but for whatever reason, we had three of them line up this month. We have, you know, it's not entirely. We probably have normally a few a year, a few to maybe half a dozen a year that fall into this category. The particularly useful tool in places such as central and eastern Montana, where we oftentimes don't have full legal access to all of our state lands that have timber on them.
And, Mr. Chairman, before I would also point out that that's the exact situation for the School Gulch limited access timber sale in Bridger Canyon. The adjacent landowner has a crew working right now harvesting timber right next to our lands. That same logger would move across that boundary and take advantage of this timber sale if approved.
General Fox?
Sean, we had at least one public comment suggesting that we, on these blocked state sections, that we should just sell them. And I understand why or why we wouldn't, but and I don't know if the commenter, Mr. Corbin, is here today, but perhaps just for the record, could you briefly explain why we wouldn't sell up one of these parcels if there's limited or no access otherwise?
Mr. Chairman, General Fox, we certainly, as part of our land banking program, people would send in and we'd evaluate isolated parcels that we don't have access to for a possible sale. In this case, generally, what we try to look at are the lowest producing parcels when we process them through land banking, and timberland is better than our lowest producing parcels. The location of this parcel is also a factor in that it could be, with some time securing access, a pretty high value parcel right there near the Bridger Bowl ski area. So I think in the long term, we should probably try to continue to get access through somebody into this parcel. We never really know when those opportunities may come along. Every once in a while, somebody will approach us. There's been a change in the landowners, and we may have an opportunity to buy or somehow secure access to this in some other way. So right now, it hasn't been contemplated as a sale parcel, but certainly be, you know, like any other parcel, would pass through our criteria for evaluation of sale.
Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Yes. Mr. Rosendale.
Thank you, Sean. Just one quick. So in summary, this is a way for the DNRC to manage those lands, generate some revenue until such time that you have a really good, clear access that you could maximize the full potential value in a sales situation.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Rosendale, exactly. And in addition, it also allows us an opportunity to capture forest health issues. In this case, we have some Douglas fir problems that we can get in and capture before that timber dies, and then we would have it lose value through rot and decay.
Thank you.
Superintendent?
Thank you very much. Mr. Thomas, if I could, and possibly Director Tubbs, when it comes to the comments and how the public is processed through. It seems that there are, it says internal and external concerns are incorporated within that. How does that get managed?
Mr. Chairman, Superintendent, so through our NEPA process where we solicit comments from the public, we receive these letters and our staff goes through and evaluates the issues that people are raising, and then we respond to those in our environmental document. And if you want more specifics about specifically the comments in this particular MEPA process. I would defer that to Sonia Gurman, who was the lead person working on that aspect of this project.
Thank you. If I could, one more then, please. Yes. Thank you. This is more specific than to the one that's on the CSKT, because it is very sensitive. Is there more time that's taken for this? There seems to be more people around the table, more of a discussion with the entire planning and design of this.
Mr. Chairman, Superintendent Artson, we have a pretty good ongoing working relationship on forest management activities with the Confederated Salish and Kootenai tribes. We have a checkerboard of ownership throughout the internal boundaries of the CS and KT reservation. So annually, we sit down and meet with their folks and talk about our upcoming potential timber sale or other management activities. So this project is just a little bit different in that it falls under the limited access component. We don't have legal access to most of the state trust land within the CS and KT. There was never any agreements formally put in place. We usually operate through temporary road use agreements, what we call TRUPs. In this case, they were concerned about various aspects of this project, and the limited access route provided them the assurance that they needed for us to be able to move forward with the sale.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Secretary.
I would ask one more follow-up question, if I could. When on landlocked pieces of property like this, when, if ever, does it make sense, or has the state ever used helicopters to bring in crews, whether it's for forest health or for timber harvesting?
Mr. Chairman, Secretary Stapleton, we have not had a helicopter timber sale in some number of years. The economics of helicopter logging have not matched up very well, probably for at least 5 years, maybe longer. It's a very expensive method of timber harvest. It's certainly something that we could consider. We would need a place, you know, to land the logs, and so there's sometimes not always limited access is not a very likely place that we would do a helicopter sale, just because if we can't get access to get in and do some timber harvest, we probably can't find a place to land. But it certainly is something that we could consider. We have used helicopter logging on state trust land in the past. Usually it's when we have very good forestry economics at play and we have ground that we just can't physically log in any other way. Too steep, too remote, can't build roads, those sorts of things.
So, Mr. Chairman, so we don't have any sort of document or guidelines that we could look at in terms of the, you know, it seems to me that, you know, humans have been flying now for 100 years that to always need to wait for 18 years to get access, for example, seems like we might have some guidance or even break points. You know, at what point does that become economic? Because it seems like a barrier unnecessarily to forest health, for example. Maybe it's not to make profit, but if it's to avoid forest fires, there may be other issues at play. It may be in the state's interest to go in there and reduce some of the fuel.
Mr. Chairman, Secretary, certainly we are always interested in looking for those types of opportunities where they exist. What we do have in terms of how this process works out is a checklist that the foresters go through to establish what access we may or may not be able to achieve and all of the things that we've done to exhaust our potential for getting legal access. Again, these limited access sales are often in sort of the central and eastern part of the state where the economics and the markets aren't as readily available as they would be, say, in the western part of the state. So, you know, is a helicopter logging option part of that checklist? It probably is not, but it's certainly something that we could add as a filter.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of action items 0717-1 will say aye.
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 Opposed say no. It passes. Mr. Director, 0717-2.
Item 2 is cabin and home sites set minimum bid for sale. There are 18 cabin sites nominated for sale on Echo Lake in Flathead County, Placid Lake in Missoula County, Lincoln Flats in Lewis and Clark County, and parcels in Gallatin, Dawson, and Richland counties. They were nominated by the lessees in conjunction with the cabin and home site sale program. The appraised values are on page 3 of 9 in the agenda, ranging from a $520,000 appraised land value on sale number 848 down to the $20,000 or $19,000 at 898. Most of those consistent at $20,000 are up in the Lincoln town of Lincoln's home sales, and we have very good comps. We recommend approval of the for setting the minimum bid for sale.
Thank you. Is there public comment? Seeing no public comment, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we approve action item numbers 0717-2, the cabin and home sites, set minimum bid for sale.
Thank you, Auditor Rosendale. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Secretary. Is there a discussion? Hearing and seeing no discussion, all those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. It appears it was approved. Item 3, Mr. Director.
Item 3 includes two parcels for preliminary approval for sale. Item A is in Dawson County, where the lessee is requesting the sale of a parcel next to their property. We reckon it is not legally accessible by the public, and as you can see on the photo, one of those low-valued rate of return properties that Sean Thomas was referring to in the land banking program. The second one is in Macomb County. It's very close to Hutterite Colony's headquarters, which is part of the reason it's hard for us to manage it. And so we recommend the sale of this as well, or the preliminary approval for sale.
Thank you. Is there public comment? Seeing no public comment, is there a motion?
I move approval of item 0717-3 A and B.
Thank you, General. Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Thank you very much, Auditor. Is there discussion?
Throw a comment, and you can see very clearly by these maps that DNRC has provided that there's no commercial timber on these sites. They're grazing for pasture, and it seems to me that we could take that revenue that would be generated after the appraisal and certainly make better use of it to properties that are higher in value and have more access for the public. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Auditor. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Passes. Item number 4, please.
Item number 4 includes two parcels, one in Park County, one in Teton County, to set the minimum bid for sale. Item A is valued at $85,000 value. It's 7.6 acres. That is an appraised value. It's 12 miles south of Livingston in the Paradise Valley. It is, as you can see on page 3 with the map, a triangle section just to the east of the highway that has been isolated from the leased section that is to the west. It's a section that we, or piece of parcel that we just don't have any real management strategy, and currently is fenced off, although it is public land. We do recommend the sale of this parcel for future management. The second one is in Teton County. This is next to the Rockport Colony. While there is a road through it, it is not, the section is not available for hunting due to the proximity of the sheds and operation of the colony. Again, we recommend setting the minimum bid for this parcel.
Thank you very much, Mr. Director. Is there public comment?
Morning, Lieutenant Governor, members of the board. My name is Randy Knowles from Great Falls. I'm going to comment on item 4A. I have commented before that it's a travesty that we allow private property owners to fence in public land to bluff or bully the public into thinking that it's their private property. And I've also commented before that we need to put up some signs so the public knows where their public property is. The access issue, have any of you floated the Yellowstone from the south side of Livingston to the north side where everyone comes out at the bridge? Because if you haven't, you need to stop there and look. The area that they exit that river is about as wide as that desk there. And yet the traffic manages itself. They get rafts in and out. People move their trailers about. It's all done. It's a great community. It's almost a community event. So, and even on the Yellowstone, since this property is south, the exits on the south end of Livingston along the river there are no cakewalk. You've got to jump up the bank no matter where you come out of that place. So I just have to believe that keeping this land in the public, available to the public. So if it must be sold, then let's get FW&P to purchase that property so it stays in the public. The Yellowstone River is still the longest undammed river in the United States. And it needs to be as much in the public eye as possible and available to the public. 7 acres is a lot of land when it comes to rafting, which is rafting and fishing, the primary activities that are going to be on this part of the Yellowstone. So I encourage you not to pass this item and to try to work a deal with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks to purchase this property if it needs to be sold. And it just irritates me to no end that we allow people to bully us into not using our public property.
Thank you very much, Mr. Knowles. Is there further public comment? Any further public comment? If not, is there a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move approval of action item 071748 B.
Thank you, General. Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, I will second so we can have some discussion on this.
Okay. Thank you very much, Auditor. Is there a discussion?
Yeah. And I'm not sure if we have anyone from FWP here or who is best to address this, but very valid point, Mr. Knowles. And a 7-acre site, while may not be big for a commercial activity for DNRC, that close to the river, it could make a nice parking and or picnic facility if, in fact, some additional access to the Yellowstone River could be purchased. So my question would be, has anybody had any conversation with FWP and or landowners to see if, instead of selling off the 7-acre site, we could actually expand the 7-acre site and gain access directly to the river and then expand the use of the 7-acre site?
Mr. Chairman, I'd refer that to Sean Thomas.
Sean?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Rosendale, so again, for the record, Sean Thomas, DNRC. This parcel does not go to the Yellowstone River, just so that everybody's 100% clear on that. There's private property that separates it from the river, so its current utility from the public's standpoint is very limited. That said, DFWP has a large fishing access site not too far south of here that is the major fishing access site and boat launch, picnic area. It's got tables, campsites, the whole nine yards. We would have scoped DFWP that we were selling this, and we received no comment, not knowing that there were, or knowing that there was no access to the river. If it had access to the river, quite frankly, it wouldn't have moved forward. But knowing that there was no access to the river, couldn't really foresee too much of a likelihood that DFWP would have any interest in it. We did not go as far as to try to figure out if there was a, you know, two or three party arrangement that we could work out with one of the adjacent private landowners in order to establish that river access.
Follow up, Mr. Chair. So when you say it's nearby, how close is the existing, roughly? 1 mile, 3 miles?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Rosendale, we had a tour down here not too long ago with some of our staff. We stopped and looked at this parcel, and then we went down the road I'm not sure exactly how far, honestly. It's not far. More than a mile, I would say less than 10 miles. Crack staff has corrected me. It's 500 feet.
500 feet? Okay. Then that being said, I've been in enough committee meetings and budget hearings with FWP that they are not looking to have additional sites to maintain, especially if they're going to be that close to each other. And then what I would do is echo, quite frankly, some comments that Mr. Knowles has made previously in this exact setting, and that is it is going to be much better for us then to do something about this property so it doesn't promote the general public from crossing private property, because that can actually damage landowner relations with the public, and that's not a good thing either. So it sounds to me like it is in the best interest to go ahead and get this property sold. Mr. Chair.
Further discussion? Mr. Secretary.
Question for Sean or somebody. Approximately how many, we're talking 12 miles south of Livingston, right? How many public access places are there approximately in the region?
Mr. Chairman, Secretary Stapleton, I'm not sure how many public access sites there are. I might try to defer to Mike Atwood, the real estate chief. He actually lived in this area for quite a while and may have a better local knowledge of it than I do, if that's okay.
It'd be wonderful.
Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mike Atwood. I'm the bureau chief for the Real Estate Management Bureau. As Sean said, I did live in this valley for almost 18 years. I've drifted it a lot with my drift boat. The feasibility of basically parking your trailer in this site, walking down, you're approximately a mile to the Prey boat ramp. So while the corner might be 500 feet from the riverbank, it is excessively steep right there. As you can tell by the little bit of the wash, it's very steep, very rocky. So physically, that would be very difficult to do. So. Regarding how many access points from Livingston down, there's approximately about a dozen in the entire area. There are some sites that are not developed, but between there and, say, Point of Rocks or Mulheron, there's approximately a dozen sites.
Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Might be for Mr. Atwood or for Mr. Thomas. The question is, do we have a threshold then when we're so close to a river that we have public comment or we look to see about access? Because it is important that when we land bank or we sell, that these questions that have been asked by the commissioners here are thoroughly vetted prior to even coming to us. So is there a process then when land that is sold for the purpose of land banking, that you look at deeper, that you look at it all the way around so that these questions could be asked prior coming to us? So it's not just a simple parcel, but it is something that does indeed about access.
Mr. Chairman, Superintendent, yes. We evaluate every parcel, and one of the first things that we look at is what are the opportunities for public access. If there's public access opportunities, what are the other reasons why it's being proposed to be sold? And those would have to be very compelling for us to move forward with a parcel that has public access. In this particular instance, there is no legal access to the river, which is the high-value recreational aspect of it. It's a sort of an odd-shaped, skinny triangle of land across the road from the bulk of the parcel. So our lessee that has the bulk of this parcel of state land doesn't have any ability to use this, although it's included in his lease. It's really not fair to him to be paying a lease rate for property that has no real purpose to be used for. These types of parcels are the kinds of things that cause a lot of work for our staff to deal with conflicts between neighbors, lessees, the public, as landowners, as Commissioner Rosendale was describing. So from a management standpoint, this parcel just makes sense for us to get rid of because it doesn't have access to the river. Again, and there's no threshold, but, you know, a legal access is, you know, it could be smaller than 500 feet from the river, or maybe a little bit more, but there is a private inholding there that prevents people from getting from this parcel to the river and vice versa.
So Mr. Chairman,
this passed all of those criteria in our mind.
I'd like to also follow up just a little bit. That in part is the reason that they come before this board three times before sale. First preliminary, then set a minimum bid, and then for final approval. So the public, in addition to all the process that, that DNRC has, and I know, for example, this particular one was up for preliminary approval last year, and we had a conservation organization come in and specifically work with us to determine that it would not prevent a bike path that they're trying to get down the highway there. The bike path is proposed for the other side of the road, not this side of the road. Had that been different and actually been located on this side, we would have considered that factor prior to bringing it to the board. And then it's not very often, but there's been two or three parcels over the course of my tenure before the board where after preliminary approval and we actually start doing the due diligence, do the MEPA, that groups get involved or individuals and we identify an issue and then just the board never sees that parcel again because we terminate the process from moving forward and we don't bring it back for setting minimum bid or final approval. We just, the scoping process identifies a key issue that would suggest there was a one over by Dillon, Montana, that the Highline Sportsmen were able to demonstrate that that was kind of a key little, it didn't look like much from the department's first review, but when we got to looking at it closely with that particular group, they used it as a cornerstone of how they access up the road. So that process does work, and the land board is, you know, if we are sometimes criticized for how long it takes us to sell property because it takes three times. Mr. Brendan gave the Real Estate Bureau not a very big thumbs up on sale of cabin sites. If it was typical real estate, it'd be done the day you decided to sell it. This is not typical real estate. It comes three times before this board. There's ample opportunity for the public to raise concerns and pursue an issue if it exists.
Further discussion? All those in favor of the motion by Attorney General and seconded by Auditor Rosendale will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Motion passes. Item number five, please.
Item number five. This is the mirror image of what we just went through in the past three pieces. This is the purchase of property. The first one is a very large, and this is the preliminary approval for purchase. So the department in this case has identified Angela Farm as a potential purchase. In the second one, the Stillwater Lazy Swift, we were approached by the Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and the Trust for Public Land and a conservation land purchase. Preliminary approval allows us to invest the money to do the due diligence to come back to the board to determine whether the purchase is a viable purchase for the trust. In the case of the acquisition in Rosebud County for Angela Farms, this is a 223,949-acre parcel. It is almost 15,000 acres of dry land, 13,000 acres of dry land, or dry land agriculture, dry land hay, and then 7,600 acres of dry land grazing. The property is for sale for a price of $15.9 million. The due diligence that we do will determine as to whether that is a price that makes any sense to the trust. It's got a lot of value to it in terms of its agricultural lease potential. We need to ground truth that if you give approval before we would ever come back and then do a full appraisal, which would then set the minimum bid. We recommend approval of that project. And then the Trust for Public Land brought to us the Stillwater Lazy Swift in Flathead County. This is a holding within the Stillwater State Forest. You saw this last month in granting some easements for right-of-ways if this sale goes through. On page 405, you've got a nice map. It is just north and west of Whitefish Lake. The salmon-colored sections at the bottom will be retained by Weyerhaeuser, and it is the subject of the kind of hashed line sections above that we will evaluate. It's a total of 13,398 acres in forest. It at one time was part of the state forest lands, but in the 1920s was sold off. This is a major conservation investment. I know the Trust for Public Lands is here. BPA is contributing a grant to purchase, I believe, six sections. The balance would be Land and Water Conservation Fund and other sources. It has the support of many. Great opportunity. I did get a chance to go on to this property personally. It is hummocky lowlands that grows trees amazingly fast. The trees have been harvested, I believe, by Sean Thomas when he was working at Plum Creek. But several years later, they're tall and ready to grow. So it looks like a great property. We've already been looking at it hard. And then timing is of the essence as there's key decisions coming up in August. We recommend approval of both for preliminary approval.
Thank you, Mr. Director. Is there public comment? Mr. Knowles.
Chairman, members of the board, just quick comment on 5A. The concluding comment was that 25,869 acres would be legally accessible to trust land, and you may be able to access it, but you may not be able to use it. And as Director Tubbs alluded to before, if there are buildings on this property, then I, as a sportsman, need to stay a quarter mile away. And so I didn't go into great detail as to where all the buildings are on this property, but that's an issue. And the buildings could be strung out on this property so that it just basically wasn't usable. I'm pretty sure ranchers don't want me shooting around their haystacks right now and other things. So just keep that in mind as you review this as the process proceeds.
Thank you, Mr. Knowles. Is there further public comment? Seeing no further public comment, is there a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that we approve 0717-5, the land banking acquisitions, and grant preliminary approval for both purchases.
Thank you, Auditor Rosendale. Is there a second?
Sure, I'll second it. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent. Is there a discussion? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I spent the last week looking at both of these parcels pretty closely, and they're both incredible purchases as far as I'm concerned. And while they both are fairly complex, the Angela Farm, not only is it a tremendous wildlife habitat area with the creeks running down through it and the diversity of pasture land and farmland, but it also gives us access to three full sections of existing school trust lands that otherwise had not had public access. So we are accomplishing many things with that purchase. And then I've also contacted not only the DNRC, but several members of the community up in the Whitefish area and had some conversations about the Stillwater Lazy Swift. And while that is, I give DNRC a lot of credit for patching this together. This is one complex transaction. They have it's five sections that are going to be funded by the Bonneville Power Administration, and then we have the balance of this that is going to be receiving funds from the Federal Forest Service through Forest Legacy Funds. And the good news is that this is going to be a conservation easement placed upon it, but within the terms of that easement, it will certainly not only allow but promote the wise management and harvest of timber in this site. So I'm very supportive of both of these transactions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Auditor. Is there further discussion? Secretary S. Stapleton.
Just a question. So the county loses tax revenue. Do they come in as in opposition to this? Is there other entities that would like to make a bid on them? In other words, my experience is a lot of times adjoining farmers like to acquire property as it comes to, or is this, is there any opposition to this?
Mr. Chairman, at this point in time, no, but the preliminary approval will allow us to go through the scoping process. One of the things about the three times before the board, if somebody else is interested in it, they can move much quicker than we can. So if somebody wants to buy the property, we lumber along, and if somebody has the money to purchase it, they certainly can pay attention to the fact that it's being sold and make a counter offer. We've seen that happen. To your first question, yes, we do not pay taxes, but we also try to invest in land banking within regions where we have sold properties. So we've sold countless sections in eastern Montana of state land funding the land bank. Now it's time to turn around and make that investment back in. We try to maintain 5.2 million acres of surface land. We are always just slightly under that because there's this land banking transaction where you have to get the money before you can purchase the next property. So we always run a few hundred thousand acres below the 5.2. But so the counties have not been in opposition. We have seen that in the past. They certainly keep an eye on us. They, again, also have the opportunity to come both comment to the department. This is the preliminary approval stage, so our due diligence follows. And then just to respond to Mr. Knowles's comments, that we will do the fact-checking, but the marketing indicates that there's a 2011 modular home and a 300,000 bushel grain capacity as improvements on the Angela Farms. So I don't think the issue of multiple structures is an issue for that property.
One follow-on? John, is there a sweet spot or a guidance that you're looking for in terms of yield when we do this, for example? So the income on this is 3%, similar to if you were buying a bond. Does the department look... You know, is there a minimum we won't go below a 2% yield, and anything above 4 is a screaming deal, or is it just sort of case by case?
Mr. Chairman, Secretary, those were good boundaries. But yes, so first of all, statutorily we have to invest in lands that make more revenue than the lands that we sold. So part of our calculation is the rates of return for the properties that we have sold. Not too hard to beat the kind of stranded parcels in eastern Montana you saw, but those cabin site sales earlier in the agenda had rates of return that were very high. So we have the obligation of making sure that we invest so that the rate of return is greater than the land sold. Generally, statewide, we had a 2.2 rate of return average. That should be increasing over time. So your kind of boundaries of 2, you know, it's pretty good. 4 and above is great, is very good in terms of what the market, the way we would view the market. We have found some parcels in that 4 and above, but a lot of the ag land is in that 2.5 to 4%. Which is a good solid. The other thing that we like about ag land is it generates revenue the year that we purchase it. And if you're a trustee, a trust out there, whether it's the School of Deaf and Blind, Montana, or just K-12, you want DNRC to get money into the coffer next year, not 20 years from now. Timberland, a little different than that. You kind of have to wait for the timber to mature before you can harvest it. So we see a parcel like that. We see great hunting opportunities on this parcel, but a really good possibility that ag land could generate a lot of revenue for the trust. And those are the factors. Certainly the rate of return is one of those factors that we consider highly.
When I was on the land board many years ago, Governor Roscoe was chair, and when we were talking about this land banking, I remember him talking about the rule of thumb. And the rule of thumb when we were talking about this was it a good deal for the state? And so I think one of the things I've found over the period of time is that we've always looked for the best deal for the state. And if it couldn't prove to be the best deal for the state, we typically didn't go forward with it. So the rule of thumb, the Roscoe rule of thumb.
Well, one of the interesting things, Lieutenant Governor, about that is that since this tracks markets, and my background in finance is during those eras, an 8 or 10 or 12% yield would probably be closer. As you know, in the late, you know, in the 80s, you could get that on CDs or your money, and so that's really what you're competing. And so what's in the best interest of the state will have a sliding scale, but we live in a time now where interest rates are so low that the corresponding income is low, and that was why the question.
Good question. Thank you. Is there further discussion? Yes, Superintendent Arnson.
Thank you, Lieutenant Governor. I understand, Director Tubbs, that this is a preliminary approval, but what kind of conditions or restrictions might be upon this? There's multiple partners within here. So do we have any acknowledgement of what there might be within that?
Mr. Chairman, and which are we referring to, the timber?
I apologize. This is a Stillwater, ladies.
Yes. Yes, we have been working very closely with the Trust for Public Land, the Fish Department of Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, the Bonneville Power Administration, and Weyerhaeuser, which are the, as well as the whitefish community, which has a high value on the purchase of this property. So all the key partners have been involved. This is kind of unlike a lot of your preliminary. We've done more work because of the time crunch that both DFWP and TPL informed us on. The BPA money goes away. We at, I think, fiscal year end, federal wise. And so there is a time sensitive nature to this conservation purchase that initially Stultz Lumber Company was the proposed takeout, and they backed away from the deal. And the Trust for Public Land and DFWP approached DNRC this spring saying, would you consider the purchase of this property? We initially were very cautious, but after looking at the productivity of the timberland, it's it blocks up our state forest, and it's an amazing conservation investment. We determined that it had good rates of return, that it would be in the interest of the trusts to own this property. Given the amount of grant monies that are coming in from other sources, it's a very good deal to the trust. And we were able to fill in a spot that otherwise this deal goes south. And I'm not saying it won't. There's 16 ways projects like this can fail. We don't want DNRC, if it looks like a good deal to us, to be one of those ways.
Further discussion.
If I could follow up on that. Thank you for that history. I'm looking to see if there's any, within that big discussion, is there any restriction or are there going to be any conditions on use within that piece of property that are a line in the sand to say that you cannot access or you will not be able to?
Mr. Chairman,
at this
Superintendent.
Point in time.
Yes, with the conservation investment, the Trust for Public Land, and really the most restrictive are the BPA covenants. We had to take a very close look at that. From a public access perspective, no, this has got great access. There's a road, as you can see in the diagram, that dissects several of the sections. Certainly, there are logging roads that are closed off of that main haul road. But I drove it. It's an absolutely gorgeous piece of property. And you have a nice little circle for the whitefish folks coming out of Whitefish Lake over to Olney and then back down to Whitefish. It has water features on it. The part of the reason the BPA chose those side sections is Lazy Creek and Swift Creek sections. Swift Creek is really almost a small river, absolutely gorgeous. So they have the highest level of protection, which means the least amount of logging would be on those sections, but we have the ability to generate enough revenue in those. We hope that all works out to justify its maintenance, but the remaining sections are very productive and fit into the, so yes, there are restrictions, but it allows the management of it as a state forest.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor will say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. Thank you. Passes. Last item, number six.
Mr. Chairman, this is your easement package benefiting a number of trusts. Northwest Energy is in again for a great number of them. You should expect that to be consistently. They are getting all of their utilities out of trespass across state lands. I really want to applaud their effort. We've been in discussion with them over the decades, but current management and their strategy now is to get into compliance before this historic road or utility access law ever comes up again, because one of these days the legislature may not extend it, and that would be very expensive to the utility and its customers should they wait that long. So I really appreciate their efforts. Charter Communication and Three Rivers Telephone is in Interbell Telephone Company, again utilities providing services to our citizens, and the Department of Transportation with the new highway construction. We recommend approval of the easement package.
Thank you, Mr. Director. Is there a public comment? Seeing no public comment, is there a motion?
I'm going to give this one to the superintendent.
Well, I'm going to give it right back.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we approve the easements this month at described in item number 0717-6.
Thank you, Autumn. Appreciate it. Is there a second? Thank you, General. Is there a discussion? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The ayes have it. Motion passes. It appears we've concluded our business.
What's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, public comment. Open public comment. Yes, Mr. Knoll. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Land Board. My name is Randy Knowles from Great Falls. A couple of times I've been asked what my definition of public access is. And I was recently in Utah, and I read this in a Utah paper. And it says, struggling for something fun to do with the family this holiday season? Imagine trying to find an activity with a son or daughter, mother or father with a disability. Utah is world-renowned for its recreation and outdoor lifestyle. Yet some Utahians can't enjoy these adventures as easily as others. Most people don't often think about how physically or emotionally disabilities would limit their opportunities for recreation and sports. So that is my definition. If it's good for the handicapped, then it's probably good for the rest of us. And there is a quote out of the Bible, Matthew 25, verse 40, that says, "Inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me." And so that's kind of my guiding force as I look at issues that come before this panel. I also was in Lincoln recently trying to pick huckleberries. Many of them are well smoked now. And I picked up a flyer. I like to pick up flyers. And there's a $1.1 million home for sale. It's about, let's see, what is that house? 3,200 square foot home, 100 acres of land, $1.1 million. I want you to think about what the property taxes are on your home. My property taxes are $2,900 a year. 2,500 square foot home on about a quarter of an acre in Great Falls, Montana. Property taxes on 100 acres, 3,200 square foot home, Lincoln, Montana, $1,300. I think the days of cheap property because you're outside the city limits are over with. And the testimony of that is the cost of fighting fires. You know, if you live out there and the stuff around you catches on fire, you kind of expect everyone to come and help you out. And the cost to run a sheriff out there, to run schools out there, and to run trash out there, it is not cheaper to live outside of a community anymore like it was in the 50s and the 60s. Number one, back then, everything was scattered about. So we need, I only throw that out there because you're the leaders of Montana, and you have the ability to explore those issues and make whatever changes need to be made. I also was in Yellowstone Park, and it was a Thursday about the middle of July.
and there were many vacancy signs up at 10 o'clock at night. Why are there any vacancy signs up at 10 o'clock? There's no vacancy signs up in Great Falls at 10 o'clock at night in the middle of July. Why are there vacancy signs in West Yellowstone? Well, for one thing, there are big, bright, new white and red signs. And these signs, and I took the liberty to exaggerate just a little bit, but these signs start out with no parking, no walking, no hiking, and I add, no skipping, jumping, or hopping. Stay in your car and keep moving. That is the message that you read in Yellowstone Park right now, Yellowstone Park. And that's not the message we want to be read in Yellowstone Park. Then, you know, and I sympathize. Their problem is you see a bear, you want to pull over, everyone wants to see the bear, and we did that. By the no hopping, no skipping, no jumping, no having fun sign. Because why do you come to Yellowstone Park? To see wildlife. You don't come to Yellowstone Park to see trees. See trees ain't place. And you can smell just so many of those hot pots. But you want to see a buffalo, you want to see an elk, you want to see a bear, see some deer. And we got the no hopping, skipping, jumping sign. Well, there's road construction in Yellowstone Park right now, and they are hauling tons of dirt from point A to, I don't know where they're hauling it to. But they need to be hauling it to point B, which creates more pullouts alongside the road. And I really think, from a safety point of view, that it should be the goal of Yellowstone Park that everyone can pull over off the side of the road in emergency, regardless of how many cars are in the park. And there are plenty of places to do that. So, again, as the leaders of our state, I encourage you to get a hold of the Park Service and encourage them to utilize that dirt to create more pullouts in Yellowstone Park so we can take down that no hopping, jumping, skipping sign and let the people enjoy the wildlife they came to see. My daughter works by Park City. And so I asked him, I said, typically what happens in Park City? Well, her partner worked in Park City about 20 years ago. And she said, well, 20 years ago, you could shoot a bullet through Park City and not hit anybody in July. She says, but that's not the case now. Park City is just as busy in July as they are in January. I said, how come? You guys have the solution to one problem right here in Great Falls, in Helena, and that is bicycling. Bicycling is the new summer activity. And there was an article in the Great Falls Tribune about the bicycling they're trying to do at Big Sky. And they're running chairlifts. So, you don't just ride your bike. You ride the chairlift up. You bicycle down the hill. Some people try to break their neck. But the other one is, and this amazed me, I said, well, what about families that don't want to ski in Park City? And they said, oh, they're developing sledding hills. And I said, well, what was the cost to go sledding for the day? $28. And don't give that away. So, and the reason I bring that up is George Willett is a longtime personality of Great Falls and runs Showdown Ski Hill. George Willett has to stand upside down and spit wooden nickels to cut down a beetle disease tree on his ski hill. And to him, cutting the tree down is a safety thing for his customers. And again, as the leaders of this community, I don't know how much Forest Service land Big Sky has. I don't know how much forest land the ski hill at Whitefish has. But we need to be supporting them because tourism is the number three economic sector in Montana. Not agriculture. Agriculture is number four. Tourism is number three. Tourism creates jobs. Jobs create taxes. Montana gets about a third of their income from income taxes. And then they buy homes, and we get our property taxes. We need to encourage that tourism. And it brings people here to decide whether they want to move to Montana or not. And the last point is... I've been corresponding with Ryan Wiest about several issues, and one is the Salmon Road. We need to get the Salmon Road easement through the BLM, through the state land, to the National Forest Service, to the traditionally used Forest Service trails that go into the Bob Marshall Wilderness. I'm starting to lose my patience on this issue, and we need to get going. Now, Ryan says we got to wait for the BLM. Well, if we wait for the BLM to do anything, it won't even be our great-grandchildren that see that easement done. I've got an issue going with them on another project, and it's 2 years, and we still haven't gotten before the administrative judge yet. We need to be proactive. We need to go in and say, BLM, we want an easement through your property to get to the Forest Service. Send us the form. And if we need to get that done, there's enough political clout in this room today to stand on Zinke's desk and make sure that gets done. It's critical. I would never have signed that agreement a year and a half ago if I would have thought that we would not be proceed on that issue. And the only reason I signed it was Tommy Butler assured me that we would go forward. And there was actually some forward movement. And then about three people resigned in Lewistown and went different places, and now they're all occupied with the fires. But it's this board that needs to keep them focused and on task with getting those easements. Those are critical. If a private property owner goes in there and makes a bid to Mr. Tubbs to buy the state land, then all my hard work to get that public road opened up goes down the tubes. If someone comes in and buys the BLM land, same results. And those issues are, at the moment, appear to be easier to buy that land than it does to get this easement. So we need to get that project on the front burner. I'll close with a quote I found from Lyndon Johnson. And this really surprised me. And here's what Lyndon said. We can and should have an abundance of trails for walking, cycling, and horseback riding. In the backcountry, we need to copy the great Appalachia Trail in all parts of America and make full use of the right-of-way and other public paths. And if you haven't walked on the Appalachia Trail, I have, and it's wonderful.
Thank you, Mr. Knowles. Is there further public comment? Seeing no further public comment, I think we have concluded our business. Do we need a motion to adjourn? I would entertain that. General Fox, second to that?
Second.
Thank you. Auditor, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. Motion carries. We are adjourned. Thank you, Board.
I think we make